Hello and welcome to episode one of Buy Into Action podcast. My name is Thomas, and today's episode features Hugo Bastian. Hugo is an audio lead and audio director, originally from Canada, from Quebec, and currently living in Barcelona. And so we had an opportunity to meet up in person and record this episode. And so it's really a deep dive into Hugo's professional career. We also touch upon things like audio design and leadership, psychoacoustics, and just generally careers in game audio. I think the conversation is really interesting. I hope that you will have an opportunity to learn something from this. And thank you so much for everybody who is listening. So without further ado, enjoy. And I hope I'll see you on the next episode. I'm from Lithuania originally as well. So I've been here 3 years now.
Okay.
So I was in the UK before, so I lived in the UK. I lived in the UK for about 10 years in like Leeds and Manchester. And then I went to Lithuania back for a bit during COVID, and then I came here.
What brought you to Barcelona?
I guess some of it was me, because I felt like the industry is like booming here and there's a lot of companies opening up. But I think a big part of it was my wife. Uh-huh. She's not originally from Lithuania. She's from Romania originally. So I guess we just kind of needed to find a place that works for both of us.
Yeah.
And we traveled here before a few times. And I thought Barcelona was kind of a good place to start. Plus, she speaks Spanish, so it made things. Still no.
I feel you. I've been here like 7 years, and I speak Spanish, but not as well as I should after 7 years. So,
whereabouts are you from originally?
I'm from Quebec, like the French part of Canada. Yeah, I'm actually moved here for work. Like I was at Ubisoft for about 8 years,
nice.
Something like that. And I got the amazing opportunity to be audio director on Rainbow Six at Ubisoft Barcelona. And I just couldn't refuse.
Nice. Well, did you kind of get used to the lifestyle here? Was it difficult for you to...
Not at all. Like, I fell in love with the city, to be honest. Actually, you know, it was a one-year contract with maybe the possibility of being permanent. And in the end, it wasn't possible for all clerical reason, you know, and I decided to leave Ubisoft after 9 years.
Okay.
So I'd be able to stay in Barcelona.
So that's why you moved to Talking Tom Guys?
Before I went to like a really small company, what was it called? The Blade That Remains. I have a blank. I was there for about, I don't know, 6 months, something like that, before they ran out of money. Okay. Scara, The Blade That Remains. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I was a one-man army in this company, writing the music, doing all the sound effects and everything. But yeah, they ran out of funding at some point. So yeah, they closed down. And then I moved like a year later or so. Okay. I moved with an outfit.
And how did you find a transition moving to mobile games from AAA, from the stuff that you worked before?
Honestly, I really liked it.
Yeah.
One thing is like Outfit 7 is an amazing company. I have to say, like, people are really nice. They have a really nice minding and they're really careful about the people. I started at a company like 3 days before the lockdown was announced or something like that. So, and I was coming back from Montreal. So already they had strict rules that I had taken the plane, so I couldn't go to the office. So I started at home and then lockdown. And I was at home for, 3 months, something like that. I thought it was really different. The challenges between like a AAA or mobile are really different in the sense that you move far, far away from having to do something hyper-realistic. Especially in this case, it was really cartoony and everything. And something I never did before. It was just so fun. You know, like the characters are funny.
Yeah.
It's nice to make, you know, non-violent games. I have nothing against violence game, but like it's nice to just make some funny sound and like to have like some piranha monster and you just take the microphone and you go like, rum, 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 you know?
there's a little bit of violence in talking to him. My son, he loves playing the game. And when we go on a trips, like I make sure I always have it downloaded. So whenever he gets bored and it's like a long trip, so he plays that and whatever, takes Talking Tom to the toilet and feeds him stuff. But then he really likes like doing this the phone and poking.
Yeah, I mean, but it's still funny, you know, like like Assassin's Creed and was like amazing working on this franchise, but it's really different. And the challenges are more on the, you know, a different technical part where like how to make all this fit in such little space. So the restrictions are quite big, but at the same time, you can use it as a tool to just think differently and make the thing just fun for the players.
Yeah. Like when you think about it, I guess when you work on big games, like you mentioned Assassin's Creed, and then you work on Rainbow Six,
yeah,
there's a lot of different sounds and you need to think about the environment and like the gun it's sounds and everything. Yeah. And when you think about Talking Tom, I mean, like the scope is not as big.
It really isn't. No, it's not. It's not. And like, but it's nice because I had the chance to be like, I call it one-man army, like, you know, on Child of Light and also at Skara. And like the first time on Child of Light, I was scared shitless. Like I was like, whoa, how am I going to do that all on my own? You know, and at the very beginning, the schedules were quite tight. And it was supposed to be really small game, really small team, which was the case for maybe 80% of the game. But then Ubisoft being Ubisoft, they were like, but this is RPG. It needs more time. It cannot be only 10 hours. So it became 40. And then it came back to maybe 20-something, 30, something like that. And there wasn't supposed to be cinematics. All of a sudden, there were cinematics. I mean, not as complex as in big. I would call kind of like kind of a double-A indie game in a really big studio, something like that. And yeah, it was just amazing, like to really take care of every aspect. I never took care of the music in games, for example. Ambiences were a bit new. It's not something I did so much before. So it was just super cool. Really nice team, really small, which like, you know, Assassin's Creed is like 300 people in Montreal, plus another 200 somewhere in a different studio and another 100 in another studio. And one of those studios is Singapore. You have 12-hour difference between the two. So you have to, you know, you leave a note and when you leave late at night and then you receive a response in the next morning.
A bunch of emails that, next
yeah,
morning.
Exactly.
See through.
It was quite different, but yeah, it's like I really like it when the scope is small enough so you can do a lot on your own. And on Child of Light, I had the chance that like at some point, it was within something called the Fun House at Ubisoft. And then there was a audio director that came in for the whole Fun House. So he became kind of the audio director for Child of Light, but I was still the lead. And then two other people came in like in the last months just to give help because, you know, like it was impossible to do everything on my own because we had so many creatures, so many worlds and all that. Pretty much everything was established.
Mm-hmm.
But we had like the boss fights and stuff like this that like it became a bit complicated. And I was really hands-on. So when there were bugs, I was the one who knew how to fix them in general because the people came in so late. They didn't know like the whole structure. So yeah, towards the end, I became a bit more of a bug fixer. And the other guys would take care more of the creative aspect.
No, fair enough. I downloaded Child of Light recently, well, when we decided to do this. Yeah. So I played it a little bit. I haven't played it before. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of Ori in terms of not maybe so much the art style or the gameplay, but maybe how it makes you feel, probably because of the music and it just kind of relaxing and I don't know, it kind of makes you get into the game. It feels quite indie. And I did like the cinematics and I actually did like the writing as well, that it goes into like a poem when you, I mean, normally when you play games, you don't necessarily pay at least me, so much attention into writing, depending maybe on the game. Like if it is like a good narrative driven game, like The Last of Us, for example, mm-hmm. you do pay attention, but normally you don't. Whereas with this one, you actually do. And it's actually quite nice.
Yeah, yeah, it's really nice. I mean, when I started, they already were set on the composer, which is Cœur de Pirate. Mm-hmm. You know, she's a pop singer, basically. And like, it took a long time before the contracts were all set up and all that. But I remember the first time we received the first music and we were in a meeting room and everybody just had shivers. You know, like it was like, oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Like, this is so nice. And it... all of a sudden, it made sense for the game. We had to rework some of the stuff because what we received was basically songs. And for a long time, like the music was kind of wall to wall, just playing all the time and looping and all that. And that was okay, but we realized we needed breaks through that. So we actually went to the same studio because she was super busy, you know, like she's touring and whatnot. And so we went to the same studio where one of the guys is a super good piano player. And he took all those themes and just played like really short version of them, like, you know, like just a few notes. And we created this totally random music system. So it basically, like every time you would go into a fight or a certain specific moment, a music would start. But when you were exploring, it was just those thing where like it just plays once in a while. And sometimes the theme actually starts. And a lot of people told me like, oh man, this time when I started flying, the theme started. Yeah. I was like, this was so cool. I was like, that was random though. Like, I'm glad you enjoyed it. But it was actually, yeah, some like... I really like this kind of music system that we created where it's, yeah, you have like a different experience every time you play it.
Very cool. So from your perspective, if you kind of had to describe what does audio director, or maybe not necessarily an audio director, but maybe an audio designer do in its essence, like in your own words, what do you do in a video game company when you work as an audio designer?
I mean, it depends on companies, but usually you're going to create the sounds. I think the best scenario is you're the sound creator, you're the middleware integrator, and you're the integrator in the engine. So you have the chance to think of how this sound is going to play and how to integrate it so it works properly. It always depends, again, in companies and even within different games and companies. Sometimes you have like more assets maker and more integrators. But I think when you have the chance to do the whole pipeline, this is the best thing ever. Because it's creative. It's also technical. And like you have the chance to really, you know, be empowered on how this is going to work. But yeah, I mean, being a sound designer hopefully is like creating assets, integrating in the middleware like WISE or FMUD. And then the engine, whether it's like Unreal or some in-house engine.
Nice. Do you have a preference, kind of engine you kind of enjoy working with? Is it Unreal? Is it a proprietary engine? Or is it Unity? I don't know if you worked with Unity.
I worked with Unity at Outfit 7. I worked with a lot of in-house engines. I lack, to be honest, a bit of the experience in Unreal. I did work in Unreal at Scara, which was super cool. And like, I really, really liked it. Unreal seems really amazing and it allows you to do a lot of stuff on its own. I do like WISE. I'm a big fan of the WISE middleware because when I started it, I started at being a sound designer. We were using WISE. So I, you know, I started right away learning it. It was Assassin's Creed 2. It was at Ubisoft Montreal, at least, the first game that was using an external middleware because they had their audio that was also in-house, but the audio director felt a need for something different. So I'm a big fan of that. After that, honestly, an engine is a bit of an engine in the sense that it's like a DAW, you know, like they all do the same in a bit of a different way, but the result's going to be the same. Obviously, it's a bit tricky when it's an in-house and in the sense that you have to learn it again. So sometimes the learning curve is a bit steep at first, but then you manage to understand the tool and how they work. Mm-hmm. And they basically all work the same, but they don't have the same they're not equal in all
right,
the ways.
Right, don't have the same capabilities.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Okay. So it depends. Like if you think of Unreal, I don't know how many hundreds of programmers are working on it. If you work in an in-house engine, then maybe it's 10, 15, 20 people working on it. So developing the tools is quite different. Mm-hmm. But sometimes they develop the tools that you really need. So that's also very interesting. So you can push. I remember when I finished AC2, I had a list of, I don't know, 2 or 3 pages of things we could improve. And then making Brotherhood was so much easier because some tools would just work like so much like faster.
Yeah. How did you start in audio design?
I worked at Dbux for 6 years, I think. Dbux is a system of moving chairs.
Okay.
So it's instead of using speakers, it's an actuator. It's a motor like below the couch. And it vibrates and moves according to what's happening on screen. So I like the look on your face.
I'm just trying to imagine this. Exactly.
Imagine, you know, those attraction park where like you have a moving seat and it like it rumbles and shakes you like every way and all that. It was a bit like that. But we were using sound to create the motion, like really low frequencies. Imagine the half a sine wave going up, then we could send it like in front, on the back or left or right, and then create some sense of motion like that. And then we would recreate the vibrations for, let's say, in helicopter, it would be a sawtooth that would be like tak 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 tak, you know, and about the same speed. So you feel, imagine like a haptic feedback for an actual couch. We were recreating the soundtracks with really low frequencies that would recreate this feeling that you're in the movie. And at some point, I kind of wanted to use my ear more than my ass.
And so what was the business model of that first?
At first, it was really for home theater. They are on many theaters. Like you pay an extra, you have like a VIP row for the Dbux experience. And yeah, I think they're even like in LA in the Chinese, the famous Chinese theater and all that. I'm not 100% sure about this part, but and still going. They were flirting with the gaming industry for a long time, the longest time, but they soon realized that gaming production is so intense that even giving like half a day or a day from a programmer was really difficult, especially towards the end of a production. So I know that they're doing some racing simulation, but that's all I know. To be honest, I didn't follow so much afterwards. And yeah, honestly, basically, I wrote to every lead or audio director in LinkedIn in Montreal for any gaming company. I had only one response, Mathieu Janson, which like was the audio director for Assassin's Creed, which I didn't know at the time it was for Assassin's Creed. But
how long ago was that, and like where did you write to them? How did you?
On LinkedIn, I wrote private messages. Like I would, you know, add people, write private messages. Hello, I'm an inspiring sound designer. I did a private course, like it's like a 1 year sound design and recording and all that. When you know it, it's the basics. Like you don't get out of that there knowing, I mean, you know, all the basics, but you have no real experience. And yeah, this guy, like he's the only one who wrote back to me, but he actually said like, listen, we're looking for people with experience. So like, really sorry, good luck. And I wrote back to him really politely, but basically saying like, how the fuck do you get experience? You know, I didn't use this language, but this is what was going in my mind, you know. I was like, I'm trying to do free internship and nobody writes back to me. Like, who's born with experience, right? How do you start? And he actually called me 2 days later and was like, well, free internship, maybe I have something for you. And we met at the Ubisoft Cafe, just wanted to make sure, you know, personality-wise, it was a good fit and all that. And I was inside, I was like praying, let's be AC2, let's be AC2, let's be AC2, because it was just announced a few weeks before. And it was actually for AC2. And yeah, he gave me the internship. I was super happy. Funny thing, like the first job he gave me was the vibration for the controller because of my experience at D-Box. And then slowly I started to do like sound integration and animations and all that. There was a girl on the team. She was super pregnant and she was going to leave. So she taught me everything that she knew. She was an amazing person. Annelise, I don't remember her last name, but she was really amazing. And she really like, she showed me everything that she was doing. She was taking care of like the in-game Foley. And I remember I was just excited. I was just adding footsteps on animation, which is something that now I hate doing. But at the time, I was like, wow, I'm contributing, you know? Like, and slowly, small, the broom, you know, NPC brooming and the NPC hammering there and stuff like that. And more responsibilities. And then starting a little bit on cinematics, like getting the Foley, putting it in, adding some stuff. And yeah, slowly making my way through.
Was it a paid internship?
No, it was a free internship. I did it for a month and a half or two. And then I went to see him. I'm like, listen, man, like my welfare is taking off soon. I need a job. And like, he was really seeing that I was motivated and all. But he was like, listen, like I've been pushing for hiring people with experience. So it, like I'm a bit in a pickle, you know, like I don't know what to do, but I'm going to give you a contract to finish this game. Like, show me what you can do, which I did. And then they gave me a permanent contract. So, yeah. And then I jumped back right away on AC Brotherhood, which was like a super quick production, but an amazing. It's my favorite so far, AC, but I didn't play the last ones. But yeah, it was really cool.
Do you get people messaging you now with the same kind of message? Is it pretty common?
Yeah. Quite common. I mean, it's not like I can hire. So that's a just different position. But I gave feedback to a lot of people sending me videos and they wanted like some feedback on the sound design and stuff like that. In some very rare cases when like it's just too much, like if it's really, really bad, I'm sorry to say, but it didn't happen that often, but it happened just a couple of times where I'm like, hey, listen, man, I don't have the time. I'm sorry, you know. But otherwise, I made a lot of lists, like with really precise 1:32, this sound, I think it needs a bit, like it needs to be more beefy or this or add bass there. And you're lacking a layer in your spell and something like that, you know, like, I mean, I was lucky enough that someone did respond to me. And I think now it's my like responsibility to do the same if I can help someone enter the gaming industry.
What would be the best approach, in your opinion, nowadays? Is it the same like you did? So people messaging you with the reel and just asking for opinion, or yeah, what would you think would be the best approach?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, it's a bit like YouTube, you know, like a Justin Bieber kind of case, you know, like where he became super popular just posting a video on YouTube, or Cœur de Pirate that wrote the music. She was actually on the, what was it called? Before Facebook, there was another MySpace, you know, she put one song there. She became super famous, you know. I think LinkedIn now is a bit like, if you write to everyone looking for a job, I'm not sure you're going to get that many response. Just apply to everything. And don't be afraid to go for, smaller games. Definitely it's easier to start in mobile, I would believe, than AAA. I don't know if I would recommend like free internship, like, but it worked for me. But I was able to do it at the time. It was either sitting at home or doing this. So for me, it was really worth it. But a lot of people are not in that position where like they're able not to work. You know, so that's different. And to be honest, I think that even now at UB, they pay every intern. I was the first and maybe only.
But your story as well. I mean, it's like kind of like a classic story as well. You know, if you really persevere, you know, it's like pursuit of happiness. You know, like you go for it. And in the end, like, you know, you just kind of gave it your all. And then the last door you open, you know, it kind of works out for you. You know, it's, I guess, if you really believe in yourself and you know that you can do it.
Definitely. I'm just saying, like, if someone writes to me for like feedback on their reel and stuff like that, I have no problem. Like I said, I'm going to give it. I'm happy to do so. If someone writes to me for a job, that's a bit different. You know what I mean? Like, unless you have like an actual contact or you know there's a job opening, you can try. But let's say there's a job opening and there's 50 people writing to the audio director that is hiring. I don't know. I don't know what would be the reaction. So it's a tricky one, honestly. I would say the best thing you can do is work on a really good demo reel. Make it really diverse. Like, make a demo reel that has sci-fi, action adventure, cartoony, something really ambient, something like that. Do not put music in there. That's a really good rule. You know, a lot of people, they want to sound design and do the music. And like, as a sound designer, it happens. But most of the time, you're not going to do music. So if that's your expectation, like, try to go in a different direction, maybe. But a real good demo is going to make the whole difference, which is super difficult at the beginning because you don't necessarily have the sound banks. You don't have necessarily like everything. You don't, you know, you're junior, like there's tools that you don't know. You can watch a lot of YouTube video. It's going to help you a lot. That's for sure. But I remember doing my demo, mostly just throwing stuff on the floor, recording with my mic and processing it a little bit, then doing some stuff around, you know. It was not an impressive demo reel, to be honest. Like when I look at it now, I'm like, it works. But, you know, like that was some time ago, I guess maybe it was still okay, but that's a really tricky part, like how to get good sound banks to start with. I guess now you have like free sounds and like a few places and where you can get free sound banks, but it's not that easy. And if you're really creative, you can create a lot just by recording yourself, but it needs a lot of processing and like really know what to do. So, yeah.
Are you a gamer? Maybe a question is, what games do you play and do you choose games based on kind of audio direction?
Absolutely sound not. And- I mean, it can happen if someone tells me like, oh man, this game sounds amazing. Uh-huh. Then, okay, I'm going to try it. But like I spend the weekend playing Mario Wonders, and don't get me wrong, it sounds good, but you know, it's Mario, you know, like it's just classic sounds and stuff like that. It's really well done. But I play a lot of different genre. At the same time, I'm playing God of War, which sounds amazing. This is a really good example. I watched a few conferences where they explain the mix and how they did the sound design and all that. Like, it's amazing. And I've worked a little bit at Ubisoft with the audio director from the game. And I talked to him quickly. And he said that like it was about 50 people in the core audio team. And at some point it went close to 150 with like outsourcers and all that. So I'm not saying you need that, but it better sound good. You know, like, yeah, for sure. Like 150 people is just insane. Like, I can imagine a lot of those, like, were editing dialogues and stuff like that. But I think they have the chance at Sony to really be able to focus on something and make it just amazing. And it shows in general in their games. Like, they sound really, really good. But to answer your question, like, I play really all kind of games. And even, it's a funny thing, but I try not to focus too much on the sound when I play. I don't know how to explain, but it's like watching a movie, you know, like I don't want to be constantly just thinking because I'm not watching them or I'm not playing the game.
Then you feel like you're
working. Exactly. So like when it sounds really good, I'm like, oh, wow, this is cool. I wonder how they did this. They did that or how they mixed. And like, I think about it a little bit, but I'd like to just like enjoy. Yeah.
Yeah. For me, it's a form of relaxation as well. You just turn it on and you play something.
Yeah, exactly.
And you disappear for a little bit, switch off.
Yeah.
Like for me, when it comes to sound, I guess, probably the game that I played recently that felt really good was Alan Wake. Uh-huh. I think like the whole atmosphere they created and everything with the sound. I mean, from the how the raindrops sound when they fall to, I don't know, to how the guns sound and everything. And like even the whole dialogue, and I think they did it. Job.
Yeah, I heard really good things. I haven't played it, you know.
Okay.
Not yet.
I recommend it.
Like I'm the kind of gamer that like I spend the whole weekend playing Mario, and then sometimes I don't play for a month or two, and then I go back to a game and I like play a bit like intensely, and then I stop. But yeah, it depends. But I'm not like constantly playing every game that's out.
I had something prepared as well regarding sounds. So I was doing some kind of research before obviously having a chat with you, and it was related to psychoacoustics. I don't know if you know the term.
Yeah.
Is it something that you think about when you're making a game or when you're creating an audio for the game, as in psychology of the player, like how would they feel when they're playing the game and how would they kind of relate to it? And, you know, how do you kind of go about it maybe?
Yeah, I think I would go, it sounds super cliche, but I would go with like the immersion. Like the psychoacoustic in the game is like, how do you immerse the player into this world first? And into those specific moments. I can't talk about Crisis 4 so much, but let's use Child of Light as an example, where when I listen back to the game, I feel like the ambiences are a bit loud. But at the time, I felt like this was a really good way of being super immersive with the game. And being a 2D platformer is quite different, right? Because we even had a debate, like, should we have surround sound or not? And we quickly decided that, yes, we should. But the positioning of the character is quite different than just having a 3D environment around you. So I wanted the ambience to, like, first off, you're like, oh, wait, I'm somewhere. I understand it's a forest, but it's not the normal forest I go to. You know, like, it's a bit scary. There's something magical. There's always, in the ambience, there's always some tonal sounds, really, really low, but some crystal balls, or like we did really wild Foley recording for this game with dry ice, all sorts of metal and glass and stuff like that to get like really special texture that I processed like a lot. And yeah, I wanted the ambience to really put you into like a really specific atmosphere. And then again, I think it's a bit high in the levels, but I think it works great. And then it's the same, like if you want to give, you know, what's your game about? Like if it's about power, then how a game like God of War, like it's all about being powerful, you know? So how do you push that? How do you give the sensation to the player that you are so powerful, you know? Or I played Spider-Man 2 lately, have the same feeling, you know? When you become Venom also, there's this whole echoey kind of thing going on, and it works. Like, it really makes you feel like you're untouchable. And those are really great examples. Again, because like the game I'm working on, like, I can't talk about so much, so it's a bit complicated, but...
But it is Crisis 4.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, that was announced. And I think it's going to be amazing. But yeah, we do have this aspect in mind a lot when we're talking the audio team. How, you know, like, it's always a mix of, depending on the game, like, you might want something, the more AAA games are going to be, like, closer to hyper-realism. It's debatable. You can make a AAA game that is really fantastic and really different. But a lot of those games tends to go towards the hyper-realistic, which makes total sense. You want like a believable environment, and it's not supposed to be magical. And, you know, like you want to feel like I'm me in the real world, and this is how it sounds. And then you try to push this as much as you can.
How early should you start thinking about game audio?
Right away. Yeah, I think it's a common mistake.
So right at the conception stage.
Yeah. I understand why it's not the case in many projects, because I think it's too early. There's nothing to work on anyways. You know, like, we can work on that later. But I think Child of Light is a great example of that. I was there. I was the fifth, sixth people on the team. They already had the idea, the general idea, but that was not, like, it was not a game. I started and we were working on a 30-second trailer that we took the music from the original song from Cœur de Pirate that, like, we had kind of a deal, so they send us some stems and we could manage something. And it was basically the character walking and going and look at something, you know, like it was really, really basic. But it gave me months to just play with things and like read different blogs, watch YouTube videos and experiment. Like I was saying, we went really wild with the Foley recordings, like you know, the singing saw and so many things. Like I wanted something really organic, and it was great to have the time to record a lot of stuff that were just textures, that were like blocks for later, that like thinking of spells. We had recorded like water phones and stuff like that, like weird instruments, boat symbols and all that. It's nothing necessarily so unique or nothing like that, but it was the idea to get like a lot of stuff and to also take out what didn't work. I remember that at the beginning, a lot of my spells had those bowed metal whatnot, and creative director was like, it's too metallic. Like, I don't like it. And his direction was always, I want it to be musical. Like, I want the sound design to be musical, which I loved because this is what I try to do all the time. I think that if you have musicality and rhythm in the sound design, most people don't notice, but this is how it stands out. Like, it works, you know, you have an explosion, you have a boom, you know, like it's like just a musicality to it. So yeah, he didn't like the metal boat and something like that. So we had the chance to have more time to explore different things. And the example that I always give is like, we knew that the character would have wings super early in the game, and everything I was trying sounded like a bug, you know, and it was not a bug. It's a fairy. And we tried so many things, and like kind of a cute story, but the Foley artist at Ubisoft, he came with a flower that he had in his tree in his backyard, and he started flipping and it was like, flip, 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 flip. And it was the perfect thing. That was just perfect, you know, like, but we had the time to explore those kind of thing. And because we tried every trick in the book and nothing was working, nothing was like, and who would have thought, like, it was a flower.
And typically now, majority of the sounds, do you get from the engine and the library, or do you still need to go and record a lot? Or does it depend?
I mean, I would say in general, it's a lot from the libraries. There's a lot of recordings, but it's always, you have to justify. You know, when you talk to a producer, how do you justify that someone somewhere spent thousands, tens of thousands of dollars on library, but it's not the guns that you want, you know?
Just going to on a little trip to America.
Yeah, exactly. And you go to the, we need to go to the deserts for 2 weeks. And, you know?
Yeah.
So, but the thing is, like, most games do it, like the big AAAs. I think you have to be smart about it. You can do a lot with libraries, definitely. And I totally understand the idea of creating your own original asset. But to be honest, some recording can be a disaster also. Like, if you're not prepared enough, like, go record some guns. You need someone that does that, like, for a living, that knows exactly how to record that and to set it up. So I think that recordings are super important, but you need to be really prepared. And again, a lot of stuff, I don't know how, like, with time, with experience, there's a lot of time where I'm looking in library, I'm like, no. And then I just take a microphone, I don't know, I play with a piece of paper, or I record some coins or whatnot, and then transform it, and I know that, like, I'm going to get a result much faster. I guess it might be easier in mobile games for stuff like that. Like, you know, you have a lot of UI sounds, like coins, like shrieking and stuff like that. But yeah, I think it's really important when you set up a sound room and stuff, you should always have a microphone just to be able to do things. Like, Child of Light is, again, another good example where we had like big spiders, and I was looking for sounds in libraries. And of course, there's no spider sounds, right? And I took my microphone and I went, and then I played with sampler, made it fast, and then, you know, it's just quicker, the high pitch. And then I started looking at, like, you know, Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter, and sounded exactly like this, you know?
We probably did the same thing.
Most probably. And it's sometimes it's just like, it's kind of fun. Like, it's a little Easter egg, like you play with your friends and like, hey, the spider, this is me going.
Nice. I love that. When it comes to people like composers and voice actors, how do you find them? And is it your job as in kind of audio director and audio lead to find them, to build relationships with them? And yeah, like, how do you typically build relationships with them? Because they're not, I guess they're not like a typical employee usually, no? They just go on like a contract.
Yeah, they're outsourcers. To be honest, in my experience, I didn't have to work with the composers so much because in general, you're going to have like a music designer on a team, especially on AAA. So at least Ubisoft Montreal, there's a whole team taking care of that, taking pitches like that you can listen to, and then they build kind of the relationship. Actually, it was like, and I totally understand why, but sometimes on Child of Light, it was a bit frustrating because that was the one time I was taking care of the music in a game, well, and talking to them. And talking directly to the composer was kind of impossible. I would write an email to someone that would write an email to someone that would talk to her, you know? So sometimes, and you know, the telephone game, you know, you don't know what's been said and yes, how it was received. And I understand why this is, you know, big companies, big politics. At Outfit 7, though, what we did was we asked for different composers to pitch something. It would give images, footage, if we had some. But sometimes, you know, it's quite early in the pre-production, so there might not be a game. We would show the picture, well, give the pitches to the entire team so they could vote. And the audio team had kind of the final balance, but it would help us gauge, like, if the whole team votes for one and we think it's something else, it might be something else, but most probably we're going to take this one because most people feel that it's a good fit. At Outfit 7, I think like 90% is this one guy. He really knows the franchise really well and he does an amazing job. Like, his music is really, it's just perfect for the brand. And he does like the shorts, not only the games, but the shorts and all. Like, he does a lot and he's just so good at it. Like, it's really hard to beat. And a bit the same for the voice design, the voice cast. Like, I never had that much implication. In For Honor, I was there like for making the recordings. I assisted to a lot of voice recording, like trying to give a bit of a direction. Usually you have like an actual voice director and then you talk to the voice director that talks to the talent. But yeah, for the recruiting, like, again, Child of Light was an example where we wanted this game to be made in Montreal branded. So it was Montreal team with Montreal singer and I don't know, there were some talks at some point of Natalie Portman and all that, but we find out that it was nothing. yeah, promises were made, and yeah, anyways, I'm going to stop there. But and then, I don't know, I thought of this actress that, like, she's a really good actress, and she's doing voiceover since she's a kid because her parents are actors also and all that. And that was it. Like, it was that easy. And it just happened that the people that take care of the same team that take care of the music, one of the guy went to high school with her and they're good friends. So he proposed to her. She was like, sure. And she came in and it was a nice voice for it. Like, I'm really happy with the choice.
I don't know if you read an article. I think it came out yesterday or today. It was about a guy who recorded Peggy 18. He got paid like 200 euros and now he's got like, I don't know, a lot of followers on TikTok. It's amazing.
Yeah, but I mean, you remember in The Simpsons, there was the girl that supposedly did the voice for Roadrunner and she's like, you know me, beep. And Homer goes like, isn't it beep, beep? No, they're repeating it. They pay me only for beep.
I also had a question about leadership. So obviously you started as an audio designer, you progressed, you became an audio director, you became a lead. Like, how did your perspective change on what leadership is when you became a lead maybe what did you learn and, you know, how different it is to be an audio lead to just being an audio designer?
Yeah, again, it depends a lot in companies and even projects. In some projects, audio director is really high up above in the sense that he's not so hands-on, but he's really like, I don't want to say controlling, but directing, literally. The vision, the direction, and saying, okay, this works, this doesn't, and all that, and having like the high-level meetings. Some audio director are full hands-on. It really depends. And as a lead, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because you're more part of the process, I would say. You're in more meetings, which is good and bad, but you have a bit of an overview of what's going on, what's happening. And it's much easier to know all that and then kind of bring this to the team and tell them like, okay, this is the direction they want to take. What do you think about it? Like, how do we approach that? How do we make this really work with the direction that they want to take? And again, I think like for me, the best way to be a lead is to have a team that is strong in what they do, that know what they're doing and never micromanage. Mm-hmm. Like, just like, okay, dude, this is what would be amazing if you could do. Go ahead with it. And they come back. You talk about it, why it works, why it doesn't, what's missing, what's lacking, how you envision it a little bit. And then the process like keeps going like that. So for the way I see it is just steering in the right direction. Because, you know, making video games, everybody is a specialist in something. And in some companies, even if you're the audio director, you don't have the last word because the creative is going to be, nah, I want this, you know. In some others, it's the total opposite. It's like, no, but you're audio director. You know best where. Exactly. Which is honestly the best position to be in, at least. But it's really interesting, like, to have those feedback. Because I heard it a lot and like I lived it a lot where you have a lot of feedback from none of you people, which is essential, don't get me wrong. But sometimes it's just like you don't know what to make out of it. Like, it's just like, yes, but, you know, or you're giving references from Super Game Boy Color, something like that, and you're really not working on a game, you know, like so you understand that people, what they have in their mind is kind of 8-bit sounds, and you're like, yeah, but this is not the direction, you know, and then they're never happy about what you deliver because you're trying to give something organic because this is your direction, you know. But the thing is with sound, it's like, it's so personal and so difficult to talk about. Because when you talk about graphics, colors and stuff, like, you know, it's on the screen. You can say like more orange, or your animation, like his arm is going too high. With sound, you can go like, but, you know, it's really difficult. And it's really hard to know what the people have in their mind. So I've learned a lot now to ask for references. Like, send me videos of something you think is cool. And even if it's not exactly that, like something that you feel is fitting, I think that's a really good way to do. And yeah, you have to talk about what's the goal behind it. And I think in general, using non-audio language kind of helps. It's really easy for new people to become too technical too quick. And that's our mistake, I think, in general. We're like, ah, yeah, but, you know, like, it's just like, we're not having the same language. So we have to find those spaces. And this is part also of being part early in the process. I would encourage anyone, like, make videos. Take those references that you like. Put them in a video, even though there's nothing, there's no game yet and all that. I saw this amazing conference at Develop in Brighton one day, and she was a sound designer that worked on the Harry Potter game. But what she said, like, she was, because again, like, the direction, we want it musical, and they have like all those, you know, little bells and stuff in mind. So she created a whole language about the base of the different spells. So this kind of spell is going to be wind, whooshes, and I don't remember, water, whatnot. And the other one's going to be fire. And, you know, and so they could talk the same language and say like, okay, I want more fire in this one and more this and more that. And it was brilliant how she created these categories. And then she could talk with the designers like super easily and having like, talking about the same thing rather than, you know, I had a lot of people going, no, but I want to. Yeah, sure. I'm going to do that. You know? And the way he's making it, I'm sure in his head, it's clear. But, you know?
What do you think is the future of audio in games? And I want to touch, I guess, a little bit on kind of new technologies and AI, and is it impacting audio design currently, and is it something that you use on a daily basis at the moment?
Honestly, I don't know about AI. To be really honest, like, it's not something I've gone deep in. It's not something I'm that interested in for the sound design. I think I'm sure it's going to get to a point that it can be a really powerful tool, but I still don't know how exactly, other than I'm going to sound like the other guy. You know what I mean? Like, I've been, for example, playing a lot with Faceplant recently, which is like a modular synth, and it's quite new to me. I should have got into the game way before, and it's amazing what you can do. Yeah, I think like that human that know their own tools, mm-hmm. know how to make their own process and all that, it's gonna go a long way, to be honest. It's a bit like all you see from those drawings and all that. Like, you can start of knowing now it's AI. There's always this little touch, it's kind of obvious. It's always the same. You know, like, long time ago, they were saying that movie like Pixar would kill the cinema and the actors wouldn't have jobs. And what happened? Like, well, they used the big names to voice the animations. The way I see it is like, AI is going to go too far and someone is going to do like a whole AI generated games and it's going to have somewhat success and whatnot. And then they're going to come back and realize that like, AI is a good tool to prototype things or like get new ideas. But if you don't put a human touch on top of it, that it's going to be a bit generic. And I think for audio is a bit the same, honestly. But again, like, I'm really not into that subject, so I might be totally wrong. Maybe there's a way of making like amazing sound in 10 minutes instead of 3 days. I don't know, but I'm not allowed to at work anyways.
I guess to end this, so obviously the first one here, but I want to, the goal is to record sort of similar podcasts every week and have more people from the games industry. I have got a few spots secured for the next couple of weeks. So I guess the question for you would be, is there something that you would be interested in asking another sort of professional in the games industry? If you had a question, it doesn't matter. I mean, you don't have to think about a profession.
Well, maybe that AI thing, if they know more than I do.
Really nice to talk to you. I really appreciate it. Thanks for coming over. And yeah, it was really good. Thanks.
You're welcome. It was fun. Cool.